The promise of America is being squandered. How are we going to restore our nation back to a sensible, citizen-centric government? Welcome to Reimagine America with Joyce Cordy. Joyce is a businesswoman, not a politician. And she's here to offer pragmatic, possible, and postpartisan solutions for the 21st century. Now, here's your host for Reimagine America, Joyce Cordy.
I listen to the daily presidential briefing from the White House because I want to hear from the experts about both the present reality of what the COVID-19 emergency is and what the experts expect that reality to be tomorrow, the next day, next week. I also listen to Mario Cuomo's daily briefing and to my own Governor Newsom's briefing when it is televised. Now, I understand we are on the West Coast and all the networks emanate from the East Coast, but let's not forget that Governor Newsom governs the fifth richest republic in the world and the most populous state in the union, and he ought to get equal billing with Mario Cuomo. Welcome to the Reimagine America Radio Hour. I'm a businesswoman, not a politician. I solve problems. I don't make them. And as the COVID-19 numbers continue to climb, the nation's response remains, as does the daily White House briefing, disjointed, contradictory, sometimes magical, and frantic. Anything but the organized, efficient, national response that we Americans would naturally expect in such a moment of crisis. Take, for example, Trump's refusal to order a national stay-in-place order. This is politics over pandemic preparedness. During the Saturday presidential briefing, he supported South Carolina's governor's refusal to issue a shelter-in-place order despite 1,700 confirmed cases of the coronavirus. Now, 1,700 cases confirmed is about 4% of the state's population of about 5 million. Now, that population is equal to about 13% of California's load, and California is, of course, under a virtual lockdown. On the surface, the one PowerPoint slide president's depth of understanding, South Carolina's resistance to join the more than 40 states with shelter-in-place orders could be argued to be reasonable. But if the president looked at the next slide, he would realize how critical to national security it is to shut down South Carolina, a major military port. South Carolina's 1,700 cases are 3.3% of the state's 5 million population. California's 13,000 cases also represent about 3.3% of the state's 39.5 million population. California followed Washington State by less than 2 weeks into a mid-March shutdown. New York waited two more weeks. Their 114,000 cases represent about 6% of that state's 19.5 million people. And most of the cases are in New York City, where they represent 13.5% of the 8.5 million residents. My point here is that California's early decision to shut down all non-essential business activity, including our enormous tourist industry and the beaches and the playgrounds where people were continuing to congregate in numbers over 10 and beyond nuclear families, and until the governor said, no, we're going to enforce that. In any case, all those decisions have made a difference in bending the curve. Here in the San Francisco Bay Area, where the first order outside of Washington State was issued, we're seeing a slowing of new cases, knock on wood. But our slowdown makes no difference if we're a nine-county island. A responsible national leader would look at the data, pick up the phone, and tell the governor of South Carolina to issue a shelter-in-place order before a bad situation there turns into a pandemic epicenter. An unmitigated, uncontrolled 3% infection rate is a flashing red light of what will be a much bigger outbreak, and it puts the entire region at risk of spreading infection. The president is correct that there is a necessary balancing act between the individual state's responsibility to manage a crisis, whether it's a hurricane or an earthquake or a wildfire or a flood, or yes, a pandemic. But the very purpose of the Federal Emergency Management Agency is to bring a surge of national help and advice and expertise to help in situations that overwhelm the reasonable planning and knowledge of a state or locality. Whether it's a once-in-a-century pandemic, as we're experiencing, or a 500-year flood in New Orleans. Sources as divergent as President Trump and Rachel Maddow have attempted to make comparisons between the Bush administration reaction to Hurricane Katrina and Trump's reaction and management of the coronavirus epidemic. It is certainly appropriate to criticize George W. Bush for his initial handling and initial response to Hurricane Katrina. President Bush himself criticized his response in his memoir, Decision Points. He acknowledges that he should have landed near New Orleans in order to assess the situation on the ground for himself 2 days after the hurricane had struck and when the flooding had begun. Regardless of how the Secret Service felt about that. But within 4 days of the hurricane, in other words, 1 day after his overflight, Bush signed the first emergency declaration and ordered the United States military to support an evacuation of much of New Orleans. Should Bush have acted quicker? Yes, he should have. But all he could do was cajole a governor who's had the final call, and she was reluctant to push both the pre-Katrina evacuation of the city of New Orleans and the frantic period following as the flooding began. Unlike President Trump, Bush accepts responsibility for that failure of his leadership and the consequent loss of life. But that's where the comparison ends. Waiting 4 days before creating a national response to the corona pandemic would be damning enough of the Trump administration. But 3 weeks of daily tail chasing is beyond unacceptable. Once announcing General Honoré's appointment, Bush left daily briefings to the general while he worked with Congress on financing a recovery plan. Yes, 1,950 lives lost in Katrina is a horrid number. But 8,600 lives lost to date and But 10,000 lives lost to date, and an anticipation that it could be as many as 250,000 lives lost if we do everything exactly right, according to Dr. Burke. Well, that demands extraordinary measures and extraordinary humility from the president and his team. We should also compare the anticipatory management styles of Presidents Bush, Obama, and Trump. In 2005, after reading a history of the Spanish flu, President Bush commissioned a U.S. pandemic response team within the National Security Council that interfaced with the National Institutes of Health. He thought the nation needed to be prepared if, God forbid, a pandemic should sweep the world. The social distancing plan that is now being deployed by Drs. Fauci and Burke across the United States is the result of research done by that Bush-appointed team and a 2007 plan that the Bush administration and the National Security Council developed in anticipation that, God forbid, they might someday have a pandemic and need it. The Obama pandemic response team briefed the incoming Trump transition team before Jared Kushner threw the whole transition plan into a dumpster behind Trump Tower days after the election. Just ask Chris Christie. Speaking of humility, President Trump asked if he had reached out to former President Bush or President Obama for advice or assistance, dismissed the question from a reporter, saying that he had not and he didn't plan to because he didn't need their advice. Their experience with HIV/AIDS, H1N1, and Ebola, a pandemic preparedness plan that had been used and then in previous administrations, but scrapped by Trump. No, these experienced leaders had nothing to offer the stable genius. All Trump needs is a daily platform from which to spout a couple of numbers, a bunch of platitudes, while reading a speech he clearly has never seen before he reaches the lectern. I mean, his little riffs would be a giveaway if it weren't for the lack of intonation. And then he adds to it a fountain of stuff made up in his head, verily as he is talking, while people are dying every 4 minutes in New York City. We can leave to the investigations and commissions that will follow the COVID-19 pandemic the assessment of too much hesitation, bad assumptions, poor execution, and a refusal to accept responsibility. All of that can wait, because right now what we need is leadership. We need a single, clear sense of direction. We need a willingness to listen to the experts, all of the experts that surround the president, and then to take their advice and not spin it. A person who is able to act on the advice of experts. And those experts are desperately trying to minimize the loss of life. That is the real reason that you and I tune into those daily briefings, is because we want to hear from those experts. We need a person who can act with experience in crisis management, who can act with a sense of urgency above all else, a person who doesn't mind being the single point of success or failure, a person who is gutsy and not afraid to overturn a few sacred cows. But the president hasn't offered that single clear point of leadership. And near as we can tell, the various teams from across the government are working at cross purposes as much as in concert, while the pandemic rages unabated. When you tell me that Pearl Harbor is coming, I don't believe that the plateau in New York has been reached and is curving down. I would love to believe that, but there seems to be a contradiction there. Vice President Pence is working with the governors, with CDC and FEMA to coordinate medical supplies and pushing out test kits in support of the disease predictive models that Dr. Brix displays daily and is working on feverishly. But you know what really worries me about those predictive models? They give you the models, they give you the numbers, but they never tell you what the assumptions behind those numbers are. And those assumptions make a real difference in what that model means. Dr. Fauci respectfully disagrees with the president's rosy talk about opening the country back up. Give the American people a sense of gravity of the situation. That's the Fauci job at this point. And he does it with grace under difficult circumstances, because you don't really ever want to disagree with the president except behind closed doors. And Navy Admiral John Pulowski, it's hard to spell and impossible to pronounce, who's responsible for procurement and supply logistics, is one of the best at what he does. And you know what? The Joint Logistics Service, for which he works, is exceptionally well suited to do this. But he's constrained in how he manages the replenishment supply lines by Dr. Burke's models of where the greatest need is, where the greatest need will be, because models are predictive and logistics are reactive. He is further constrained by the presidential direction that supplies be delivered to commercial distributors rather than directly to hospital systems. Now, we saw today that in some cases, those supplies are now getting delivered directly to big hospital systems, and that's a very big improvement. Because when you start sending them to commercial distributors, you open a new layer of delay and bureaucracy. If you ship them through the hospital system, even if they don't have big, fancy computerized ways to track all this stuff, you can use a simple Excel spreadsheet to record the distribution for future billings. It's about 5 columns at most, and I could draft it out in a couple of minutes. So when you distribute by bringing in 747s loaded with new supplies and then distribute them to the hospitals through the commercial distribution system, well, can you say graft and profiteering? There is something deeply wrong when profit gets mixed up with saving lives and protecting medical workers. You know, I don't criticize the Admiral for a moment. He is doing the best he can with the hand he has been dealt, and he's made some progress at some direct drop deliveries, but he isn't any Captain Crozier. The difference between line and staff officers in the military: the former charge into the line of fire, and the latter make rear admiral by running from it. Further complicating the distribution process is the president. In other words, going back to the rear admiral for just a second, you don't make rear admiral by making waves. Further complicating the distribution process for the admiral, and in his defense, is the president himself. He just refuses to slam down the National Defense Production Act to get supplies made that will be needed now and into the foreseeable future. We should be grateful to the great number of American companies like Ford, General Motors, VDOC, Apple, who have stepped, Boeing, 3M, who stepped into the breach without being told by the national government that they needed to do it, because they saw a need and they had manufacturing expertise that could be converted quickly in order to be helpful. And that's what makes America great. That entrepreneurship is greatly appreciated, but it still needs to flow through an organized, disciplined distribution process so we have what we need, where we need it, when we need it. The governors are helping each other, regardless of FEMA. They're shipping ventilators and material and so forth back and forth between one another where they see opportunities to be of service. The president over the weekend started threatening 3M with what he was going to do to them if they redirected shipments of Made in America equipment, or equipment we needed here in the U.S. in terms of filling the supply chain, if all 3M also shipped product to Canada and Latin America. He made these threats to do horrible things to 3M. And by the way, 3M was on this in January. There's a previous podcast that deals with that. But Mike Roman was on this in January and increased 3M production across the country, and then went to the government with his records to point out that it was the distribution channel that was preventing that product from reaching the end users and hospitals, because the longer that the distributors could hold it, the more they could get for it. So instead of getting 85 cents for a N95 mask, they were now charging $7. Mike Roman, the CEO of 3M, took that matter directly to the Attorney General. Gets no credit for that. He gets whipped for sending product to Canada and Mexico, where there are significant COVID outbreaks. And the president is whipping him while at the same time, these 747s are coming into the United States with gobs and gobs and gobs of material from Asia. The president's position vis-a-vis 3M and Canada and Latin America is nihilistic, nationalistic, and ignores the fact that microbes don't recognize national borders. Canada and Mexico, with their own outbreaks, you know, the microbes are going to move effortlessly back and forth across the northern and southern borders. So we're all one system. And 3M's doing the right thing, the humanitarian thing, to try to help in as many places as they can. And at the same time that he's beating 3M for behaving in a humanitarian manner with its three customers, Canada, the United States, and Mexico, the president is ordering supplies redirected to his favorite governors, thinking about his reelection efforts, and his favorite senators. Governors call up his famous cell phone during his infamous executive time, and all of a sudden, they get whatever it is they want. The Washington Post has reported that Kentucky and Oklahoma, both deeply red states, you note, they've received more equipment and supplies than their state emergency people ordered. And New York and Louisiana are, on the other hand, predicted to run out of ventilators sometime next week, except for the fact that California, Washington, Oregon, and a couple of other states have sent ventilators that they have not, knock on wood, at this moment needed to New York to supplement what New York has. And the government also, FEMA, sent them 4,000 for an expected caseload of 40,000. According to Dr. Burke's model. Massachusetts Republican governor, note, Republican governor, Charlie Baker, complained a couple days ago that a shipment of PPE, of personal protective equipment, that he'd procured on the open market was, when it arrived in Boston, seized by FEMA and redistributed to other states, despite the fact that Boston is a hotspot. Add to all this confusion, there is Jared Kushner and his whiz kid fraternity brothers. Jared doesn't think this eminent epidemiologist, Dr. Burks, knows what, you know, he doesn't think her models are as good as his models. He has no pandemic experience. He has no medical degree, but he insists that he must be correct. And Jared wants to be a disruptor. Well, he is. Good ideas are always welcome, but the authority to disrupt any rational, organized process at this point is irresponsible at best and deadly at worst. A fear expressed by the New York Times in an editorial Thursday night of last week, after Jared made his maiden appearance on the president's daily brief. That headline read simply, "We are all dead." What can a girl say? With projections that potentially millions of Americans could get sick and perhaps a quarter of a million could die, bending the curve of infection and reducing the number of deaths would require that all of us do our part. Dr. Dix Bricks reminds us of this every day, that if we do everything right, her model says, a quarter of a million people will die. Today, that death toll is over 10,000. Where will it be tomorrow? But bending the curve of infection and of death will require that all of us do our part, and that begins with President Trump. This is a moment for sober and focused judgment. It is a moment for expertise. It is a moment for expertise and responsibility vested in a single person, to whom the president, who must think about all other matter of things, current and future, national defense, the economy, etc. So the president really needs to defer to a single person to be responsible for delivering sober and focused judgment to bring this pandemic out of into containment and allow all of us out of house arrest. Now, the mark of a great leader is the ability to appoint the right person to the right job and then to step back and bask in their success. There are a number of people who could do this job, who could be a great leader, and Donald Trump could stand or sit at the back of the presidential daily brief after saying 5 minutes worth of introduction and bask in the success of a single person with expertise able to execute. So I've got some suggestions for the president on that point. How about General Jim Mattis? His name has been bandied about as a person for this type of role. I'm not the only person who thinks that it's needed, but then I think that Jim Mattis would not be the right person because of his relationship with Trump. That relationship kind of stands in the way. His letter of resignation sort of set it off. And then there is former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Now, Christie is still on good terms with the president. That's vital to keeping his job as an analyst at ABC News. And you know what Chris Christie is? He's an experienced crisis manager. He's my kind of take no prisoners kind of leader. He's respected by other governors. They may not like him, but they do respect him. But Jared Kushner would rather have the blood of a million people on his hands than find himself in Chris Christie's chain of command. So this single point of expertise and power cannot be Chris Christie. You know, there's another possibility. Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker hired retired four-star General Stanley McChrystal to manage Massachusetts' pandemic response. McChrystal clearly could step in to that larger USA role. He's got the leadership skills. And then he has another really big factor that would recommend him to the president, and that is that Obama fired him. And you know what? The fact that Obama fired him might make Stanley McChrystal the perfect crisis manager in the Trump White House. But if you don't like that choice, there is Bill Gates. Bill Gates gave a TED Talk in 2015, and he predicted the next war would not be kinetic, but a microbe. He put $500 million of his own money behind that prophecy. Now, since I've been up close and personal, I can tell you don't be deceived by Gates's low-key demeanor. I've seen him in action. People respond when he sets a direction. It's kind of an or else situation. Even Vice President Pence has the executive experience to really do what the president has appointed him to do, lead this task force, gather together all the elements of government in order to attack this microbial enemy. But the president won't empower him to do it, even if empowering Pence would save tens of thousands of lives. If Dr. Burke's model and her projections are correct, and there were intimations in the last couple of days that they believe they are correct, then we are fast reaching the moment when Mitch McConnell needs to go to the president in the same spirit that congressional leaders went to Lyndon Johnson in 1968. And what followed was a speech by Lyndon Johnson saying that if he were nominated by the Democratic Party for another full term of his own, he would not run to be president. He felt he was losing the primary, but the rationale was the mission at hand, that is trying to bring Vietnam to a successful close before it burst into a larger war, required his total focus. Now, freed of political concerns, President Trump could step to the side and potentially save tens of thousands, God help us, maybe a million lives, and earn himself a salutary place in history.
Thanks for listening to Reimagine America with Joyce Cordy. You can learn more at reimagineamerica.org. Got a comment or an idea for a future show? Email Joyce at reimagineamerica.org or find her on Twitter at Joyce Cordy or at Reimagine Radio. Take a minute now and go to reimagineamerica.org. Join the forum. We'd love to hear your thoughts. If you love the podcast, donate and tell others. You can invite Joyce to speak at your next meeting or conference through reimagineamerica.org. And finally, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast at ricochet.com or c-suitenetwork.com. That's c-suitenetwork.com. Together, we really can reimagine America.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.